This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Ow. Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White. A whiter smile without the wince.
All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom with a very special episode of DOD. I'm Kyle Mikey, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Ben Raven. Ben, it is here, it is upon us. The NFL script writers went out of the way to bring us gold on this week's episode of the NFL. It's Lions, Rams, first week of the playoffs, Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff, Sean McVay, I mean, Brad Holmes going up against a team that really reveres him. I mean, there's so many juicy storylines in this game, and we got a great guest on tap, and I can say that right now because we just recorded it. And it was a fantastic conversation with Jordan Rodriguez of The Athletic, Rams beat writer for The Athletic. She has a fantastic job. We went deep with her, so there's no mailbag this week, Ben. But, you know, as we set this up, I guess, what are your feelings here going to what's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a historic day in Lions football and something that will be remembered forever.
I feel like I got that first date feeling again. I haven't felt the first date feeling in a while. I got butterflies in my stomach. I'm truly excited for this weekend. I'm excited to go to work. I mean, I've been excited to go to work every day this year, but like, this is special, man. Like, this is special. I mean, we're just talking about Jordan and the importance of Stafford to the city and Detroit. The resurrection of Goff. I mean, Dan Campbell doesn't want to harp on the history or these topics, but we do, and we will, and we do. And I mean, just a shout out to Jordan because she is truly one of the best in the game at what she does and super appreciative of her time. Great long form piece on Matthew Stafford last week. Worth checking out. But just, I'm excited, man. I'm so excited. Prime time, Ford Field, playoffs. Doesn't get better than that.
I've been on this beat since 2013. That probably makes me one of the losingest beat writers in the NFL. I have covered the depths. You have too, Ben. When did you join the beat? 19?
The second year Patricia was my first season.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2019. It's been, as every Lions fan listening and everyone else listening knows, it's been a tough go in Detroit football. But people in Detroit love football. People in Michigan love football. Michigan just won the national championship. Like, this is a football-rich state. I think there was this giant misconception out there when the Lions were god-awful for forever that because of that, they didn't have a fan base or whatever. I got that question all the time when I did, like, national interviews and whatnot. And I'm like, no. That you think you have to understand is people are football mad in this state, in this area, and they love the Lions. And even when the Tigers are good or the Red Wings are good, it's like those things are celebrated. The Lions were still king, and it was a sleeping giant, and it was awakened this year. To see Arrowhead invaded by a swarm of Lions fans on opening night, to what just happened in the finale. You got Dan Skipper, a sixth offensive lineman being serenaded in a 30-20 win. That gives you the franchise record for wins in a season. It's just been a special season. And now to see the next chapter where this road goes, the road goes to its past and Matthew Stafford and the quarterback who was so good for them for so long, Ben, but couldn't take them to the heights that they wanted to go. And was ultimately traded to LA and has gone on to the Super Bowl there, has led them to a terrific comeback there this year. I mean, then you got the other side of it, Ben. Jared Goff going against Sean McVay, the coach that gave up on him. Like, I'm just so excited for Sunday, and I'm really excited to get to this interview. with Jordan as well, because she gives us such a fantastic perspective on the other side of this drama that we've been anticipating all year and certainly all week.
No, absolutely. And it's just, Jordan does such a great job of just bringing it full circle. The Goff demise, the rise of Stafford, the resurrection of Stafford, because like Stafford had a very Detroit season in 2022. And here he is back with a reshaped, revamped roster, getting the most out of his wide receivers, leading his team to the playoffs, fighting through injuries, doing Matthew Stafford things. And now he gets the chance to do it in front of the fans that he died for 10, 11, whatever, how many years. So it's just, you could not ask for a better game, a better moment in the wild card round. And it's just, I mean, this is one of those moments that's just going to live in Detroit infamy forever.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what happens, I mean, if it's 50-0, maybe not, but like, you know, I have a hard time like just going into this game. I think maybe this is the first time in my whole career of doing this stuff that like going into something, I'm like, I am there documenting something that will be remembered forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Given the depths of where the Lions have been and now this memorable season and the opponent that awaits them on Sunday night in prime time at a building that's holding its first playoff game for a fan base that's starved for a winner. And they're right there, Ben. But they have number 9 waiting in the way. It's really just you couldn't write it up any better.
No, and Dan Campbell says this is why you get into the game. This is why you coach. This is why you play. This is why we kill ourselves for 5 months for moments like this. I mean, I always wanted my byline on one of those like posters of newspaper clippings that people put on their wall. And this is one of those games where that could happen. So it's just, I mean, it's special for us too. So, I mean, and I think this conversation with Jordan does a really good job of bringing that into the picture too.
Yeah, so let's dive in. Let's bring in Jordan. It's a fantastic interview. Hope you guys enjoy breaking down Lions-Rams wild card at Ford Field. All right, Ben, we got a very special guest on tap this week. And I'm not just saying that because she gave me an excellent taco recommendation for the summer in Ventura, California. Jordan Rodriguez of The Athletic. Jordan, thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys. How's it going? How's your week?
You know, business as usual. Business as usual.
I was telling you guys off air, I am so stinking excited for the Detroit Lions beat. This is so awesome. I'm excited to see you guys. I'm excited to see the atmosphere. Like, this rocks. Objectively, we don't root for, you know, success, fail, whatever. But like, I really wanted this to happen, not just to go feel that environment, because I love Detroit Lions fans. I think everyone, the swell of support when the Rams went to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago was amazing. Everyone's really nice to each other in my comment section at The Athletic. We get a lot of Lions fans in there too for Stafford. And I'm so excited for everyone. Like, this is going to rock. It's going to be awesome.
I can't even imagine. I really can't. Like, I've covered the team for 12 years. I'm an old guy now, and I can't really imagine what Ford Field's going to be like, because it really is a fantastic home atmosphere, particularly when they're playing relevant football, which they obviously have been the whole season. And I mean, I'm sure you've seen the swarms of fans on the road for the Lions this year. You can imagine what it's been like at Ford Field. It's been popping. But now you bring the first playoff game ever into that building, the first playoff game in 30 years in Detroit. And then, like you said, it's like that would be enough for an incredible stage and environment. But Ben and I, Justin Rogers from the news, a couple of us were sitting up in the press box working and watching that game go final. And we're like, holy bleep, this is going to happen. It's going to be insane.
it's like the really great meme of the guy who like, is slowly putting something in a pot and all of a sudden the pot explodes. Like, that's what this is. It's like bit by bit and all of a sudden, whoosh.
Absolutely.
Everything just inferno. Yeah.
That Sam Darnold fumble and we knew it was reality.
Jordan, you do such incredible work for The Athletic routinely. And I always appreciate how in-depth and out of the box you can go and bring new insight to a team that's in a major market. I've always appreciated about your approach. And last week I caught your in-depth piece on Matthew Stafford and kind of, you know, his travels in LA, but particularly in the second half of this year, his role and LA was 3-6 at one point this year and is now in the playoffs after a 7-1 finish. I really appreciated your piece on Stafford and his role in that. I encourage people to go check it out. Matthew Stafford's fingerprints, flair, permeate, revived Rams offense over at The Athletic. Go check it out. Jordan, I wanted to bring you on because I wanted, like, people in Detroit, we're very familiar with Matthew Stafford, his history. We also caught, obviously, the Super Bowl run in 2021 after the trade. I'm really curious to ask you about Stafford's journey since 21. Obviously, a tough year last year for LA, 5 wins. Stafford was hurt. And then at one point this year, 3-6. They finished 7-1. I'm just curious, the journey you've seen Stafford, the progress, the development over the last 2 years out there in LA.
Well, I think it's one of the more quietly profound moments this year was him acknowledging how hard 2022 was. You guys know better than most, and Detroit certainly knows how Matthew Stafford just pushes through things. And things are not difficult. It's just another day, you know, it's just another thing to get through. And it was this very quiet, quick, as he does with the quick comments and the little sharp inserts here every once in a while in conversation. A quick acknowledgement at a press conference a few weeks ago before the Rams are going to play the New Orleans Saints, obviously different playing, you know, different environment, all that stuff there at SoFi instead of in the Superdome. But that was where Matthew Stafford suffered the spinal cord contusion. But it wasn't just that. It was also that he had taken like something like his 70th hit that season. His head coach, I've documented this a lot over at The Athletic, Sean McVay was in no man's land personally and mentally was just not there. It was just absent. And then he's talked openly about that. We won't get down that road. But Matthew was, it was sort of like everything was slipping through his fingers and, oh, and then by the way, spinal cord contusion sounds really lovely to deal with. Right. And then he was shut down for the season. And so then it wasn't just that it wasn't just the physical pain of what that season was and what he was experiencing. It was also like, now you're pretty separated from the team. They're cycling through their viable backups. Then they go out and they get Baker Mayfield. And at the time, I was texting with someone in the building who was like, oh, well, this is a good chance for Sean McVay to have a project, kind of like help bring him back a little bit into, you know, feeling something about football, you know? But in that process, Matthew is not, you know, he's not on the field practicing with teammates, the thing he loves to do. He's very much out of a routine he's kept for years and years and years in a place where it was such a rush for success. And then the crash was enormous for everybody. And so what I thought was a really good thing for him to have done was to acknowledge how hard it was, but then to keep doing the things that he's doing this year, which is it almost feels like he's making up for everything he lost, all the time he lost last year, with how immersed he is in rebuilding and collaborating on creating this offense. They had to reinvent it again. And this is the third time Sean McVay's done it in his 7 years in LA. This is twice with Matthew Stafford, once when he came in 2021, and then again this past offseason. And Matthew is at the forefront of that. A healthy Matthew Stafford is at the forefront of that because of the way he can blend all he's seen of football and been through. You know, every 3 years, the game changes again. Every 5 years, the game changes again in a big, significant way. Matthew's been through like 5 of those at this point. So he
I can confirm that. I can confirm.
Yeah. So bringing all of the things that he's seen and integrating and sort of melding things with new ideas, new motions, new rules, new things that they have, new players and young players that have this energy that I think has been really great for him to be around. It's, I think, been a profound season in ways he will never admit to, which I touch on in the story. There's this thing that you can see and recognize in him that teeters close to, I think, a little bit of darkness in some ways, but there's always football and there's always creating and there's always this this nuance of a recognition and a clear-eyed view of what the sport really is and how he can shape it and how he can navigate and even manipulate it in some ways for his advantages.
Yeah, I'm glad you say it like that, the rush to success, because I remember watching that 22 season go down and obviously the start of this year and then the headlines about not connecting with his younger teammates and just like the work, you know, that his wife making headlines. We won't say her name on this podcast, but just I'm just curious, like how he evolved from that point, because like this is familiar territory, but he's in like a different stage of his career. And like Les Snead and Sean McVay like really made over that roster with young pieces this year. And I was just always sitting back here like wondering, like, what's his mentality right now as the Lions kind of enter that next phase? And as he kind of slides back into familiar injured no man's land last year. And then what was, I guess my question is like, what was the turning point this season when it started to click? I mean, with those young pieces, with the familiar faces and with McVay, cause like that, just me on the outside in is like, what's going through his head? Like, what is his mentality right now? This is like a crazy 180 switch so quickly.
Yeah, it was crazy. What they did though in the draft that I don't think it's talked about enough is the players they brought in are excellent communicators. And they have their methods. I've covered this over at The Athletic. They have a lot of methods for that sort of trait identification. Brad Holmes helped develop them. Go Brad. Excited for Brad too. Big Brad Holmes fan. We all are over here in LA. When the Lions would play some, and they started getting more primetime games, more Thursday night games, and the games are always on in the locker room. And so everyone who would pass through would say, "Hey, the Fightin' Brad Holmeses are playing."
That's awesome.
There's a fondness there. That's just cool. I mean, they're going to try to, you know, destroy each other this week, but like there's a genuine fondness there for what's happening and what they've built, a genuine respect. Anyway, the turning point was certainly, I mean, they kind of hit rock bottom in Green Bay. Matthew wasn't playing. He had the sprained UCL in his thumb. And, you know, it was one of the worst football games I've ever seen in my life. Probably one of the worst ones they've ever experienced. They didn't have the right equipment. Everything went wrong. They had a Brett Rypien at backup quarterback. They gave him a run pass, hide the quarterback plan. I mean, they didn't have their running backs. The whole thing was terrible. And then out of the bye, Kyren Williams, their lead running back, he returned from an injury. Cooper Kupp got a little bit healthier than he had been. Matthew Stafford had the 2 weeks to rest his thumb at that point. It's because the bye was included in that. And there was this sense that, okay, we're going to just keep recovering on the fly here. And, we're just going to go out there and treat every week like it's 1 week at a time. It's such a cliche, but these guys actually lived the cliche, which was wildly impressive from a writer perspective, saying like, okay, now I kind of believe the cliche a little bit, you know, staying ultra present and treating every week like it was a playoff game. I thought that was really interesting. In 2022, they would not have been able to do that because they were so tired. They were so much older than they are collectively on this roster. This time around, there's a youthfulness that they don't get tired. It's like these damn kids are running around, you know, like, there's an energy there. They don't know what they don't know. And Sean McVay really gravitated toward that. That's how he himself felt in 2017, when he had no idea what failure would feel like as a coach. He had no idea what pitfalls to look for or what, you know, even a 5-year plan would look like. He was just going out there and trying to play football. And that is really what the mentality of this team has been. The scheme and execution have now met each other in a way where you could see the theory of the new scheme early in the season and the execution wasn't quite there. And they were playing a brutal schedule to open the season. They got injured. And then, you know, post bye, everything started to match each other. The developmental learning curve started to really strike where it was supposed to be. And I think that was one of the most eye-opening things, was everybody was ready for that moment to happen. Everybody was almost bracing, but a positive connotation of that to finally click. They would know it when it happened because they would feel it. And I would have to say, like, getting great communicators really helped, because early on and all through training camp, all you saw was Matthew Stafford talking to these players. And all you saw on the field was instructive teaching. He was putting on that hat as well as, because I think there's this thing that a lot of people don't think about, which is, if you are a young receiver or a young running back, the most important thing that you can learn early on is exactly what your quarterback wants you to do. And And vice versa. If you have a rookie quarterback, you usually need a veteran receiver, someone who is very technical, who can tell the rookie quarterback exactly where the ball needs to go, especially in this offense where so much is based on timing and space and patterns and sequencing. And so there was a need for Matthew Stafford to be that communicative, as he always has been, but really to be direct. And there was this sort of unblinking absorption by the younger players of, okay, this guy is telling us how we will be successful. And then as that communication keeps unfolding, you see them all start to fall into the same rhythms. You're seeing rookie guys who are on Matthew Stafford's like work schedule, essentially, which doesn't really happen unless you've got that direct open line of communication. And I think that's what's helped them succeed so long. You don't see rookie wall. You haven't seen a rookie wall with these guys because they're all on Matthew Stafford's old guy schedule. Right. So it's really fascinating how that has actually one has helped the other because he's also gotten a lot of energy from them as well.
My experience covering Matthew Stafford just in terms of off the field was, behind a podium and in front of a microphone, he didn't have much to say. He tried to keep it as clean as possible. His goal, I think, was to say as little as possible, make as few headlines as possible. But the more I got to know him and earn a little trust, and there was some relationship there, I really enjoy talking to him, off the record. Mondays after games were some of my favorite chats with him. Like, you definitely got, as soon as like the crowd dispersed and it was just guys talking ball, he was fantastic. You got real insight into the layers and nuances of the game that I didn't even know existed. But then he'd go in front of a microphone and say very little. So I say that because I'm curious what you, first of all, like maybe what your personal relationship or even just what it's been like for you covering Matthew off the field. And then as a follow-up to that, of course, he's going to say the coach speak this week about the matchup and all the right things. But I'm curious just your sense of what this week is really like for him, what it means to him to come back to Detroit and play in this kind of game.
Yeah, well, first of all, if you are a human, you will be moved by this game, right? Like if you have a pulse, you will be moved. So I think that I get why he would want to continue to almost like manifest process, right? Like, hey, I'm looking at it like another game and sort of speak it aloud. And then if you say it enough, maybe it'll be true kind of at a point, and stay in your routine and all of those things. However, what I do think, and this is real because I see it in little moments and little flashes of those quieter, behind the scenes times, where there is never stopped being an earnest and I think very genuine care for that city and for the organization. obviously they, looking at it now from a competitive level, but on a personal level, there's always been an attachment there. It's like, when you grow up in a place as an adult, not just your childhood home or whatever, but like when you do your second growing up as an adult, you're never going to forget that place, right? And you're never going to forget what it taught you, how it shaped you. And for a lot of people, especially in this profession, it's a lot of different places. But for him, it was one place. And this, I think what I do feel from him, even though it's going to be, stay focused on the task at hand publicly, there is undoubtedly a deep appreciation for what the city is going to be able to experience. Obviously, he's going to want to win the game, but for the city to have this moment, to have its moment, for the fan base to have its moment, I see how he, when the games are on, he's got one eye on it in the locker room when he's kind of going through his routine, little comments here and there that I won't share about like different plays or different, a strategy, things like that. There's always a genuine warm fondness and appreciation for what that place has meant to him in his life. And so that's to me, I would think one of the more impressive things to do is to come out and be settled and not let yourself get carried away. That will be to me, a feat that matches planning this game and strategizing against a really strong opponent, it will be to do that, to come out and be settled and to be within your mind and to be in that quiet space. Covering Matthew Stafford has been really cool because you learn so much between the podium sessions, right? About football. I think he treats football with such a respect, but that the kind of respect, they're equals to each other, right? The game and him, they're these two boxers squaring up, and it's going to go every round, and every round is going to be insane. And I think there's an acceptance of that and watching the reverence that he carries for the sport, but also knowing that he can manipulate it and that he can, think within it and the space there seems to be like a freedom almost to be fully immersed in something like that. It's very meditative in a way. I think it was interesting. He finds it so easy, it seems, to be so wholly immersed in just that topic, right? In that sport. And what I find is the more you talk to people like that about football, the more you learn about them as people, because they're talking about football and they're talking about football and they're going through some of the advanced layers of scheme and philosophy, and all of a sudden they're talking about themselves and they don't realize it. But if you listen and you know what you're looking for and what you're listening for, all of a sudden you're learning about the person. You're not just talking about the sport. And sometimes they don't even realize that what they've shared in terms of those quieter parts of their personality. And so I have a lot of admiration for how he thinks about it and how he personifies the game within himself. And I think it's been a cool experience. He loosened up with us a lot after last year. I think probably because it's like, what's the worst that could happen? My spine was in a terrible state. Because it was such a frenzy in 21, right? Like it was such a mad dash to do this thing. And so now this is the year that I think we're really starting to see him fill space, right? Fill that space in a way where, he is the guy there and he's the engine, but also I think a lot of the younger players being there too, he's joking around, he's open. And I think that is something interesting, because I'd heard that from when he came from Detroit, where there's a very specific time to have a conversation with him. It's not going to be at the podium or anything like that, but also like it's interesting. I learn every single time I talk to him. And the Rams locker room is different. They're in temporary facilities. They're in portable, like these portable trailers basically in Thousand Oaks. So it's not a real locker room vibe anyway. But when the time is there, he takes the time, and it's been really instructive, and you're learning about football, but you're also learning about the person too.
I think I told you 10 minutes. We're well over that at this point, but I do have one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've been rambling.
No, you're good.
No, this is great stuff. I love hearing about it because I covered the guy for a decade and also had a lot of respect for him. And
how will you guys feel watching him take the field? That's my question. We obviously don't root, but how will it, because you spent a decade of your life around this person, seeing them every day, how will it feel for you guys flipping the tables all of a sudden? You thought you were getting rid of me, but I flipped it all of a sudden on you.
I love it. it's the journalist in you. You can't help it.
Yeah.
I think maybe surreal is the word. I'm just really excited. I mean, I'm more excited for this game. The stakes, the playoffs, like we're Lions beat writers. We get this once every 5 years. And I was stoked for the Seattle game in 2016. I was real stoked for the Cowboys game when the Lions won 11 games in 2014. But then you add in the spectacle, the stage, the drama. It's like a soap opera feel this week, like the story arcs of the players. But like, Stafford wasn't just a player in Detroit. He was the face of Detroit football. And he was fairly polarizing in the media. But every time he'd go to the stadium, it's Stafford jerseys everywhere. And he's getting standing ovations. I mean, I think he was really beloved by the fans and certainly very skilled. The team success didn't follow. And there's a lot of reasons outside of Matthew Stafford for that, particularly in the later years. He really tightened up his game after Caldwell arrived, and yet the team's success never followed because they failed in their ability to build around him. And I think he shouldered so much blame for some people for the lack of team success over like 60 years, you know, and this is kind of how the narrative unfolded. And then, you know, he went to LA and I just had no doubt that he was going to have success, and to see him have that immediate success and the game winning passes he was throwing in the playoffs. And just, I mean, just, he wasn't Stat Padford, this like this real negative stereotype he had with some in Detroit, that he just had these big numbers but couldn't win. Like, obviously the man can win, but no one can win in Detroit, no one for 60 years. And now it's happening, and it's happening with the quarterback the Rams gave up on, and it's happening with the draft capital they gave the Lions to take the contract of Jared Goff off their hands in exchange for Stafford. And now they're at this moment, this 3-year moment of tough Jordan, tough rebuild, 3-13-1 in year one, a lot of struggles early last year, and just a magical season this year. Really. I mean, it was a charmed season in so many ways. Seeing, like, Ben and I were talking about it on the previous podcast, like getting on planes to go to Rhodes Stadiums and people are singing on the planes. Like it's been a festive year. Every game feels like an occasion, and we're just not used to that in Detroit, but people love football in this city and state, and it's unfurling now around Jared Goff, this guy that the Rams gave up on. I'm sure you can see where this is going, and now you have the climax, this home playoff game, the first one in forever, and it's going down against the guy who is the face of the franchise for so long. It's gonna be played under a banner he can never win. But he's obviously a great player, and he's coming for your throat too. Like, the spectacle is something that Ben and I, and I think everyone in this state, is still trying to wrap our heads around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Surreal is the right word, because, I mean, I was a high school senior when he was the first overall pick in Detroit. I was a college student at Central Michigan when he started, when it was 0-16, and then he got in there. I mean, and just, I mean, he's a Detroit legend. I mean, he really is. Like, he's on that Miguel Cabrera, like, level for me of Detroit sports legends. And I mean, you look back at separated shoulder against the Cleveland Browns and going out and winning it anyway. I mean, there are so many moments about this guy. This guy literally deteriorated his body and took years off of his life to try and bring this city a winner. And he's polarizing to an extent, but I think a lot of that is just radio chatter, filling airwaves and stuff like that, because we've talked about it this year. I mean, number 9 Stafford is still one of the most 3 popular jerseys that you see on the road, at home, for a division winning team. So like, that impact is deep. It's real. It's one of those games I'm going to get there as early as possible, because I want to feel every minute of it that I can.
I hope it's not me overstepping. I know you want to get me out of here. I'm sorry, but this is just the best. I'm soaking up every delicious minute of what this week is, right?
Absolutely.
I hope it's not overstepping or overstating, but just listening to you guys and watching your faces change as you talk about this, like, it's just so cool. And I think Matthew Stafford, to me, like, represents someone who taught you football, showed what football could really, what it really was, all of the brutality of it, all of the thought that goes into it, all of the work that goes into it, what it really is, not just I'm a fan of this game and I know what this game is about, but really the layers and what it takes, and the range of it, the lowest of lows and the deepest of frustrations, into the highest of highs. And the highest of highs were with another team. And that's some pain too. But there is nothing beautiful that happens in football without brutality and pain. And so I think that is who Matthew Stafford represents to me. And I think it's so fitting that he's returning to that city to, I think, come full circle and be this version of himself, but also that version of himself as well.
Yeah.
Brutality, poetry, like you're putting it so well, because that is this game, and this particular game personifies the best of it, I think. Stafford shouldered so much physical pain. I mean, he was really beat up. I'm sure you're seeing the repercussions of it in his later years, but like, he was such an Iron Man. I forget how many games in a row he started, but playing through a broken back and like broken fingers and, I mean, all kinds of stuff. I mean, he got, as you can imagine, playing in Detroit for so long, he got beat up physically, but like emotionally too, you know, the losses, the heartbreaking losses, the perpetual disappointment, I think of the wild card game in 2014 when they had probably their best team around Stafford. And he goes back to Texas where he's from and they take a lead and they throw the flag on a pass interference against the Cowboys on third down. They assess the penalty. Ben already knows where this is going. I'm sure Jordan, you did too.
Yeah.
We just lived this.
Yeah, we just went all through this. But I've never seen that. They assess the penalty. They move the ball up. They go back up to the line of scrimmage and then they blow the whistle and they move the ball back. They pick up the flag and the Lions have to punt. They shank the punt. The Cowboys come back the other way. They score a go-ahead touchdown. And the Lions haven't been that close since to anything. And Stafford is the face of that kind of stuff. He was for so long. But he's so, like we've been talking about in this conversation, he's so skilled physically. He knows the game mentally. He's a leader. He does all the right things. But because he played in Detroit and Detroit has lost for 60 years, you know, he shouldered so much of the burden that is Detroit Lions football. And to now see the Lions kind of unburden themselves.
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
In the post-Stafford era. And now to have this climax, this moment, the first home playoff game ever at Ford Field, played under a banner that Stafford could never win, and do it against Stafford, who has gone to LA and shown the kind of leader and winner that he is. Poetry, brutality, poetry. It's like football personified.
We love this dumb, crazy, awesome sport. Yeah. We love it.
Jordan, I have one more if you have the time for it. Just one follow-up.
Yes, of course I do. Yeah. Twist my arm. I'll still talk about this game. Yeah.
We focused on Stafford. I just wanted to ask one Jared Goff question, the man that he was, you know, in the other side of that trade. And that was such, you know, it was when the trade went down, it was the Matthew Stafford trade. And the Lions took that trade because of the draft capital. They got an extra first-round pick. Brad Holmes viewed that as setting the up for better long-term success, which was always the goal. They weren't just trying to do what they had done forever, which was just scratch together something competent. Like, they were trying to put the nuts and bolts in for something sustainable. Extra first round pick helps you do that. Internally in Detroit, they viewed Jared Goff as, you know, they didn't know for sure, you know, that he would become this kind of guy that he is now, that he would have this rebirth, but they thought it was possible. So I just wanted to get your perspective on what exactly happened in the last 2 years in LA. It was pretty bad. McVay obviously gave up on him. There was some hard feelings there. And why did McVay view, you know, this trade necessary, Stafford as necessary for taking them to where they've gone?
Yeah, again, a week where everyone will say the right things at the podium, right? But, you know, I covered 1 year of Jared, but I covered this entire situation really deeply because it was also intertwined with a major shift in the way that the Rams were building their team and then also their run up to the Super Bowl, and then a huge schematic shift that had a ripple effect across the entire league, not just in the Rams' own building. And Jared was, I think, the catalyst for that, but also was caught in the wake of it, really. Because there was a point after that first Super Bowl run and then into 2019, and then especially in that defining moment between 2019 and 2020, where Sean McVay was starting to lose patience, but it wasn't personified yet, I don't think, in Jared at that point. What happened was he hired Brandon Staley as his defensive coordinator because Brandon Staley could install the same scheme that beat Sean McVay in the Super Bowl. And then a couple weeks prior, Vic Fangio had put him in a blender, essentially. And Sean was watching that defense and thinking, wow, that is some good stuff. That might be what's next. That's changing all the rules of my offense. And if something could change the rules of his offense, then it's time to reshape the offense. But at the same time, like the bright coaches that we see across the league wanted to take that thing and make it his own and learn its rules. So then he could attack it. And so goes out and hires Brandon Staley. And it was the COVID year where the building was shut down. And so everyone was learning the theory of this defense on that side of the ball. And Sean was also sort of learning it, but also sort of making these tiny changes to his offense to where when they finally would get out on the field, they would be practicing a little bit differently against this defense after having this defense in house through the spring and learning its rules and tendencies, those types of things. And so they get out on the field and they're making up for lost time, essentially. It's like a 2-week training camp period. You have to get this defense off the ground. So Sean McVay is allowing the practices to be really competitive, which is what Wade Phillips did for him in 2017 to get his own offense off the ground. So acted in turn to Staley. And so these ultra competitive game-like situations within the rules of the, you know, tackling rules, contact rules of the CBA start to unfold in that truncated training camp period. And a lot of stress and high intensity was happening during that time in a way that was squeezed into a much shorter period of preparation before the season began. The defense immediately show, I mean, it's Aaron Donald, it's Jalen Ramsey. It is Darius Williams having his best year as a corner. It is, you know, Michael Brockers, Sebastian Joseph Day is breaking out. It is, you know, this incredible, these two incredible safeties. And it's this really smart scheme that not a lot of people were running at that time. So it was still this new thing that people would not be able to plan for. And it put Jared in hell. I mean, it was, the defense was openly, and I would always stand behind the DBs because that's where to stand if you want to know all the stuff, right? And so it was open season. Like, it was competitive, and Sean would start ending. He would get so furious because his offense was being, it was almost like he was getting this scab ripped off over and over and over again. This is what happened to you in the Super Bowl. This is what happened to you in the Super Bowl. This is what happened to you in the Super Bowl. You're failing over and over and over again. And it started to just explode out of him. And it was going in Jared's direction, really. And this is all me saying as a writer, you know, in that sort of language. And you could see the relationship deteriorating. And it certainly was internally through that 2020 season, really, especially. And I think there was a decision to, you know, to try to see what they could do to move away from that situation at quarterback and into a quarterback who would, at that point, their pace had changed. Jared's development pace, people forget all the time how young he still was. And people, because he went to a Super Bowl so early, it's like, I mean, he was what, 24 when this all happened, and people forget that he was still developing as a quarterback, really in his, what, entering his third season, 2.5 seasons of that offense after his disaster initial year with, you know, Jeff Fisher. And there was still a development process. And then Sean starts losing coordinators and quarterbacks coaches and the people who you're supposed to work with to develop. You know, this all starts happening all at the same time. And Sean is haunted, really, by what happened to him in that Super Bowl, and all out breakneck, hectic, manic speed to get back to it by any means necessary, no matter the cost. Personally, no matter the cost, professionally, no matter what it costs. And it cost Jared. And it cost Jared his confidence in those practices. Andrew Whitworth has talked to me about this a lot. Those practices were so brutal and so stressful in terms of what had to, the problem solving that had to happen and the stress of what if you don't have the right answer. And, you know, there's no time to really develop into that. It's, we are getting back to the Super Bowl by any means necessary. And so going into a new play, like a new plan at that position was about what Sean felt, going to find a quarterback who would match the pace he was in at that time. And I think, like, I say this not to villainize anybody. I think it was a perfect storm of events that in hindsight, you could see it clearly, the catalyst point schematically, and also where McVay was at in his, you know, on his own journey, and where Jared was at on his, and the paces, people don't grow and evolve at the same time. And they certainly weren't at that point. And so what I think is the coolest thing about this now, and why we really call this a win-win trade, is because Sean went out and got the quarterback that matched the pace he was at that time. Then they crashed together essentially in 2022 for different reasons, Matthew physically and then Sean personally. And then they rebuild again together because they're now back in step together again in terms of the pace is the pace now, and everybody's sort of pulling in the same direction. And then Jared not only got to a place where he was going to go through some real adversity early on that would teach him different things in a different place than maybe he had previously experienced with so much success once Sean McVay comes in LA in 17. But then also he was going to grow as a person, as a human. He was going to keep being tough-minded like he always has been, but he was going to develop at the same time as this team is also growing around him. And there's a unity, a collectiveness in that, that Jared didn't really have before, because it was all instant success when Sean comes in and you are succeeding because of the scheme. And now it's like, you know, Jared is a leader on that team. I'm saying this externally. It looks like that way to me. He's a leader on that team, and he's also grown with the team. And that's something that's really cool, because that's the pace that he didn't know he needed. And didn't have necessarily, but now he got it in Detroit, even though it came with some hard moments at first, and now he's here. And I think when Brad Holmes is assessing, like, okay, what really is this going to be? Brad scouted Jared, which you guys know. But I think what was important that Brad did that maybe, taught the Rams, I think, a pretty big lesson is you're not so much looking at what the quarterback ceiling can be. You're looking at what his floor is. Will he ever hit that floor again? And how can you raise that floor up enough to where it's not detrimental or regressive to your team, and you can keep the pace continuing of the build and the development? And I think that's what the Lions have done a really good job of, is everybody's pace has stayed in lockstep and unified. And I think that's done wonders for Jared, just as he's been a leader for that team.
Oh, I can 100% confirm all of that, because the Jared that we got here in Allen Park, Detroit in 2021, compared to the Jared, the person, the player, how he dealt with us, how he looked in practice, it's a completely different person. I mean, he truly is like one of the main heartbeats of this team. And that's kind of been the most fascinating thing, is just seeing that internal growth with every step of the roster. So I definitely hear what you're saying, and just, yeah. I mean, Kyle, you'd agree with that, right? The Jared that landed here in 2021, the person, the player, how he dealt with us to now. I mean, how much different is that?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I just had dogs barking, so I had to go handle something real fast. I just sat back down and had no idea what you were saying until just now. And my follow-up was going to be exactly that, to see the personal evolution of a Jared Goff who came in with most definitely a chip on his shoulder. He was curt, maybe like polite and respectful, but also like didn't take shit from no one.
So passive aggressive.
Yeah, he was passive aggressive for sure. And he took a lot of shit, like with how bad things got in the first half of that season. I mean, there was one particular game, I forget who they were playing, but he threw away a fourth down pass. It was ugly. He got booed for it. It happened again, although he claims that it was just an errant pass like a week or two later. You're winless at that point. Your offense is bad. Jared Goff's one of the most conservative quarterbacks in the league. He's being called check down king, stuff like that. I mean, he took a lot of bullets. And to see everything that's happened from the back half of that 21 season till now, and to see the confidence unfurl, the rewarding the faith of the Lions organization for always kind of backing him as a QB1, seeing the success that's followed. Ben Johnson's had a lot to do with that. He has definitely emerged as a confident, cool leader, and you don't really hear the passive aggressiveness. You don't feel the chip so much anymore. Although I do wonder, going into a week like this with who's on the other sideline, if maybe we hear a little bit more of that.
I know. I'm curious to hear how the pressers will go with him this week, because Sean is Sean. He's going to say all the things that and honestly, I do know this, because he talked to me about this when I worked on the series, The Play Callers, this last summer. he does regret how he handled that entire situation. Like, you didn't have, like, there didn't have to be such a personal cost, really, with how that, all of that unfolded. There didn't have to be such a, you didn't have to create a moment, a defining moment in someone else's life to make a football decision. And so I think that I do know that he regrets how he handled it. I don't, there's no regret at all, obviously, of going after, you know, Matthew Stafford or anything like that. But I do think that that sort of reflection is something that Sean McVay had to really take a look at, especially this last offseason, of like, what did my race to get back and win a Super Bowl cost the people around me? And that was one of them. And so I do think that there was some genuine reflection there. It's great to see people respond to the situations that happen to them, or that they, the bad situations that they create themselves, in a way that sort of demonstrates defined growth and advancement and all of that.
Jordan, I think we were just going to talk to you for like 10 or 15 and use it.
This was so fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this was great.
I'm not a big believer in cutting off a good thing. This was great. And I really appreciate your perspective from the other side of a narrative that, you know, we're fully invested in, but we're getting one half of the narrative and reading the rest of it from afar. And it's been great to catch up. I always love seeing you at the combine and around in the offseason, and to have the opportunity to talk to you this week, a big week, has been a treat.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. This has been my pleasure. I'm to blame for keeping you as long as I did, but I'm so stoked for this weekend. This is going to be so special. It's going to be one that I think, regardless of whether it's good, it's going to have to be a good game, right? There's no other way. Yeah. But regardless of that, it's going to be one I think we'll remember forever for what it means. And certainly so thrilled for you guys. Thrilled for the Detroit beat. I was telling you guys off recording, I love following the Detroit beat. It's my favorite beat to read. And I'm thrilled for you guys. I genuinely am. You deserve this. You deserve a moment like this. And I'm going to just be awash in all of the great writing that comes out of this. So it's going
to
be great.
It's strange for Ben and I and the rest of the beat to like feel like we do, you know, hard work. Every beat writer in the country does hard work, but to feel like you do good work, and it's across the beat, Justin Rogers, Dave Brickett, like there's a lot of talent and a lot of hardworking folks. But to feel like when you're writing about a 3-11 team, that's going to fire a coach. Sometimes you feel like you're writing into the ether, and to feel
I've been lurking.
I love it.
You're the one. You're the one. I knew
I'm
there was
the
somebody.
One. Yeah, I just keep hitting refresh. That's how your page views happen. Yeah.
But yeah, this moment, this season has been fun for both Ben and I on a professional, personal level. And to have it climax in a game like this, it's so, I mean, as everyone on Twitter has already said, the writers were in their bag for this one. I just couldn't write it up any better. Real quickly, I don't know if you do predictions or not, but have you thought through your projection for the game?
I don't do predictions. Yep. I also predicted the Rams would be a 7-win team this year and they're a 10-win team. So I don't do predictions. I find them very anxiety inducing. I'm predicting, I it's going to be cool. That's all I care about. It's going to be cool.
I feel pretty good about that one. Yep. I feel pretty good about that one. I predicted 12 wins for the Lions this year. So no anxiety for me.
Yeah.
Although I did predict the Lions to win. Ben and I off the cuff on our last episode out of Sunday night, I just like, Ben, like, what do you think for this game? And he predicted a win. And I'm like, yeah, totally. You're in the moment. It's like, you know, coming out of the season finale, they win a game, they played well. The more I've thought about it and I think about Stafford and how good he is, and I think about Puka and I think about Cooper Kupp and the Lions struggles with like wide receiver ones all year. I mean, they're a very strong team with a weakness on the perimeter. I don't know. I've kind of ruined that prediction, Ben, just a little bit.
See, I'm sticking with mine, but I will admit there are two scenarios in my head. There's Lions winning a close one, or there's Stafford going God mode and just burying them. So it's one of those two in my mind.
Well, it's going to be compelling stuff. Jordan Rodrigue of The Athletic has been our guest. Does just tremendous work out there. Wrote a great story last week. If you want to hear more about Matthew Stafford's development in L.A., it's over at The Athletic. It's called Matthew Stafford's Fingerprints, Flair, Permeate, Revived Rams Offense. Jordan, thank you for the taco recommendations. Thank you for the conversation. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend.
Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to it.